Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. I'm Colleen Pilar, and I'm here, as always, with Julie Fudge-Smith. And today we're talking about the five cues that every dog should know. And Julie and I each came up with our list independently and have not shared them with one another. So it will be interesting to hear what we think dogs need to know. So Julie, what do you think about the five cues dogs need to know?
Well, I think that I came up with four that I think that a dog really needs to know. And then I have optional ones, which I kind of tweak according to what the family needs.
Right.
So I guess my four that I think are absolutely necessary are sit is the first one, come or mm-hmm. good recall, leash manners, can I walk nicely on my leash, and then the other one is off, which is basically no jumping, keeping four paws on the floor. So those are my four, I think, real essential ones for family dogs. Then my optional ones are leave it or drop it. They're a little bit different, but they're similar. Target or touch, when your dog touches their nose to your hand. Settle or go to bed. And down. How about you?
I came up with name game, sit, come, stay, and good leash manners, loose leash walking. So why don't we go to sit? We'll just start with sit. So why is sit like the magic one that's so easy that solves everything?
Well, that's a very good question. And I think it's because when you are sitting, right? It's a behavior that's incompatible with other behaviors such as jumping or walking away or or you're digging
or rolling in
right.
dirt.
If you're sitting, you're really not capable of doing a whole lot of the undesirable behaviors. And you can still bark and howl right. and cry and carry on and do that kind of thing, but you're not going to do any of the other sort of physically destructive or distracting kind of behaviors. The other thing is for me, when I'm dealing especially with big dogs, I find sit to be a real critical one. Because, like last night, for example, in my intermediate class, I have a Shiloh Shepherd, a German Shepherd, and a Golden Doodle, all pretty big dogs. And the Shiloh Shepherd was beautiful. She's all white, but she's like 130 pounds, big dog. So even when she's just standing there, she's kind of scary. But the instant that butt goes mm-hmm. on the ground, boy, she's a lot more approachable. And so I think especially mm-hmm. for big dogs, even just them standing there, even if they're being good dogs, it can be intimidating to people. But there's something about a dog that's sitting that makes it a lot less intimidating. So that's another reason why I really like sit, is it makes a dog more approachable and friendly, especially if it's a big dog. But it's mostly because I can't be doing all the other things that you don't want me to do if I'm sitting.
Right. So it's a great short-term, okay, you do this for a second kind of behavior. Like, I just need to let somebody in my front door, so why don't you sit? Or I just need right. to get the mail out of my mailbox, so why don't you sit? Or I just need to pull this pan out of the oven, so why don't you sit?
Yes.
All sorts of times that it could be just really helpful for you to just sit, just
yes,
for a second.
I just want to put my shoe on. I just really need to tie this shoe, and then we'll go for the walk. So as excited as you are, if you are keep licking my ears, I cannot tie my shoe. So you need to just sit right there for just a second, sweetheart, so I can tie my shoe. Not that that ever happens at all in my house.
No, I'm sure.
Yeah.
No.
So that's why I think, so if you can't teach your dog anything else, make your sit rock solid. Absolutely mm-hmm. rock solid. And everybody will think you're a master trainer anyway. Mm-hmm. If your dog sits, gosh, I can't get a dog to sit. You know, if you can get your dog to sit when you sit, the bottom goes on the ground, people are going to think you're a real master trainer.
Yeah. So on my list, but not on yours, was stay, which kind of falls into the sit piece, because how long do we want a dog to sit? Now, technically, some people train that you give a dog a cue and the dog should remain doing that until further notice. And I think most of us with our family dog training don't actually do that. So we say sit, and the dog sits, and then eventually the dog gets up, and the dog has successfully sat, and the dog has successfully released itself. So when you want a dog to sit and stay and remain, I do like to add some sort of cue that says, here is the duration and I'll let you know when you're done. But for a lot of the sits, it's totally fine to just have the dog do a quick sit so you can do whatever it is that you're doing. So that is
well, can I put stay on my list? Because I think you're right.
Well, I don't know, because if you were only allowed to have five, and you've got this nice long list of optional ones we're going to get to talk about, so I don't
know. That's true. But stay's a good one. I did kind of debate stay, and I also like name game. That's another one that was on yours.
Yes.
That was not on mine.
Name game, I think name game and sit, honestly, if we were going to cut it down to two things, it's those two. Mm-hmm. Look at me when I call you. Like, pay attention because I need your attention. And if you can't get your dog's attention, you can't teach them anything. And then now that I've got your attention, here's what I want you to do. Sit. If we had those two things, really almost all of our behavior issues would come. Now, almost all of my clients come to class or set up their private lesson believing that their dog actually knows its name and knows how to sit.
Yes.
So what I'm looking for is actually being able to do that in a distracting situation, being able to be consistent and repeatable delivery of those two cues, that if I call you and it's noisy or crazy or busy or there's a good smell, you're still going to look.
Right. So. Right. And I'm sure you do too, but especially in beginning classes, about the second or third week, I get but he does this just fine at home in the kitchen. I'm like, I don't think you're lying to me. I really don't. I am absolutely sure that he does this in the kitchen just perfectly, but we're not in the kitchen.
Right.
You know, we're in a field house and we have a lot of other dogs and I've had another class. And so there might be tidbits on the floor. And so you're right. What we're looking for is what can your dog do as the distractions begin to increase and become more difficult for him. So right. I agree. He knows how to sit.
Yeah, he does. And one of the things that you and I have talked about a bunch of times on the podcast is that behavior deteriorates under stress.
Right.
So when you're at class, it's more challenging. Or when you have company, it's more challenging. Or when you're at Petco, it's more challenging. And the behavior that your dog knows at home falls apart. So if we can practice it in a variety of locations to make it really strong, then when it deteriorates, it's only going to deteriorate a little. You're still going to have it. It's not going to be great. It's not going to be as perfect as you got in the kitchen. But when you call your dog's name at the pet store or in the middle of a class or when you're in company, they're still going to look.
Right. Which is another reason why this is kind of sort of as a side note. I don't allow a lot of socialization going on between dogs in class. Don't allow a lot of visiting, because what I really want the dogs to learn is that I can be in the room or I can be in the space with other dogs and still pay attention to my owner. And if I can go over and visit that cute little golden doodle over there anytime I want, I'm going to be less likely to learn to work around distractions.
Right. And it's also the lesson of you can't always get what you want.
Like, that's right.
You know, the mere fact that you'd like to go see the golden doodle doesn't mean the golden doodle wants you to come say hi. So we do also need the self-control lesson of you can't always get what you want, which is not on either of our lists, unfortunately.
No, it's not. But it comes with practicing all these things.
It does.
You know, that is sort of, that's not a behavior. That's a result of these behaviors that we're teaching our dogs. So that's sort of the consequence of learning these five things, is that your dog is going to learn some self-control and that I don't always get what I want when I want it. So that's not a behavior, that's a consequence. So that's why they're not on the list.
Okay. So I think name game leads very naturally into come.
Yes.
Because the name game is, I would like your attention. And come is, we're not next to each other. I'd like your attention here. Physically and mentally, I want you here near me.
Yes. So, and I also think too is that when I ask owners, you know, what are the things that you really want your dog to do? The three things they come up with almost routinely is, I want my dog to come to me when I call. I want him to walk nicely on leash, and I want him to not jump on people.
Right.
So that's why I put those three. And come is just really important. And I find that a lot of people think they have a good come, but it deteriorates again. And that deteriorates very quickly.
Very quickly.
Because you don't have the, I'm right next to you, and so you can touch the dog or, you know, whatever, so that he's a little bit more likely to be engaged with you. Now, if you have to use a come, it means because your dog's at a distance. Mm-hmm. And so therefore the distraction is either closer, you're not as close. It's a hard one.
It takes a lot of practice and consistency.
It really does.
It takes more than you think.
Yes, and it requires, as far as I'm concerned, it requires that you can have, I feel like my dogs have a couple different kinds of cum. Mm-hmm. We have sort of the casual cum, like, you need to get over here a little bit closer to me because I'm moving along. And we have these serious, you really need to come to me cum.
Yes.
And I think working both of those will give you a stronger recall and a stronger relationship with your dog, but they both need to be worked. And I tend to try not to use my, you have to be here next to me cum until we practice that in the backyard and various other places for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it takes a lot of work and practice for that. And there is a distinction between them, because often we are just sort of going, hey, you, come on, you know. And come on is not the same as now.
Come. Yeah, that's right.
So, and both are totally fair.
Yes.
Both are completely fair. Again, it's what works right for your family and for your dog, and looking at what are the criteria that you're training toward and how consistent do you want to be to get to them.
Right.
And what management tools do you want to use if you're not training them? Because, you know, if your dog isn't ever off leash, and if your dog isn't, you know, having areas where it isn't coming back to you regularly, you might be doing just your inside the house kind of cum. It'd be good to have a really great cum regardless, but you're probably not practicing it as much as somebody
right.
who has a giant backyard and the dog runs out to the back corner and barks at the neighbors and you need to call it back in. That person's probably practicing a lot more often than you are.
Right. And in fact, depending on some of the dogs, I will offer what I call a total recall class. And that's all we do for 6 weeks is work mm-hmm. on cum. That is our complete and utter focus. And I find that the students that take those are the ones who are doing a lot more. They generally have large tracts of land.
Yeah.
They have dogs that they want to be able to take with them through this tract of land with off lead, or they do hiking with their dogs, and they really need to have a dog who's going to show up immediately.
Yeah.
So
I always think recall is a funny word for cum. I mean, dog trainers use
yes.
it all the time,
but right.
no client has ever said to me, you know what I'd really like? A good recall.
Yeah.
Has that ever happened to you?
No.
So it's kind of funny. We use this buzzword. We're like, oh yeah, recall. Trainers use it all the time.
All the time.
But normal people don't.
No, why is it a recall? Why isn't it just a call?
I know. It's all very odd.
It is very odd.
But you know, that's
any trainer worth their salt in ego has to say recall. We can't just say come.
So. I see. I guess I have no salt or ego.
That's right. Sorry, Colleen.
The saltless one.
The saltless ego. It sounds like a really, really bad biography of somebody. Okay. So I had sit. We both had cum. We both had leash manners. Is that correct?
We haven't really talked about the leash manners.
No, we haven't talked about leash manners.
So, like you said, most people do want to be able to walk their dog without being dragged along. So I do make a distinction between mm-hmm. loose leash walking and heel. So I will totally teach you how to teach your dog to heel after we have taught you how to have loose leash walking. And loose leash walking is the two of us are going in the same direction and the leash is not tight, but your dog is not in perfect position beside you every second and every
Correct.
Step. So I think that...
And that's what I usually think when I... Especially since you and I both specialize in mm-hmm. family dog training. That's what I think most families want. They're not all that concerned about, you know, obedience style heeling. They just... don't want to be dragged, and they don't want their kids to be dragged. So, yeah, I define loose lead walking when I'm talking to my students to give them an idea of what it is I mean by this, is that the leash has to look like mm-hmm. a J. There has to be a loop in the leash. And then the other thing I tell them, I said, look, if you think about it, if there's a 2-foot circle that goes all the way around you, and the dog is within that 2-foot circle, then the leash is likely to be quite loose. And so if the dog's in that circle, you can move forward because the leash is not taut. Now, what I usually do is recommend they choose one side or the other. I don't care which side they choose, but choose one side or the other. So then we start talking about semicircles. So if the dog's on the right, it'd be a semicircle that goes to your right that's mm-hmm. 2 feet around. And so then we talk about a 2-tier reward system. So that if the dog is within the 2-foot circle, the first level of reward is we are moving mm-hmm. forward. But if the dog happens to be by your side, right, I tell people, think of your kneecap as your target zone. And if your dog is hovering around your kneecap, give him a treat. That's the second level of reward. So the dog learns, I stay within this 2-foot circle, we can move, but if I stay closer to my person, I also get a treat while moving. And I find that to be a pretty effective way for teaching loose-lead walking. Teaches the dog to hang a little bit closer so we're not tempted to get to the end of the leash. And then if they want to start heeling, we're already sort of working in
that
direction.
I love the description there, because it is true that the movement is the first tier of reward, and really making that clear to the client. I haven't ever used those words before, that particular, you know, the half circle and all of that, but I'm totally stealing it now, because I think it's a good way of doing it.
Well, I will send you my loose lead walking guide that has original drawings of circles and dogs and leashes and
stuff. Sounds like it should be in the show notes.
It will be in the show notes.
Okay,
there we go.
Okay, the magic loose leash walking guide with diagrams.
Yeah, okay. I'm no Leonardo da Vinci, okay? Just want to let people know that. I mean, at one point there's a little stick figure in here, but there are a couple of other cute dog drawings in there, so there you go. But anyway, but I found that when I describe it as sort of a semicircle, it's a really clear image for most people. And the idea of a 2-tier reward system, also, that seems to make sense to people.
Yeah, I've expressed those ideas before, but I don't think quite so clearly to the clients, because the movement is indeed a reward. The other thing I would say is I like for people to think of loose leash walking as a walk for both of us, which means that there will be some stopping and some sniffing. That's totally fine. This is not like how fast can we cover the territory here. We're going out and having a little exercise. You get to look around and they get to use their nose, and everybody's happy when we get back home. Nobody's dragged anybody anywhere, but it was enjoyable for both of you.
Yes. Yes. So then what number 4 on my list was off, which is different than down. A lot of people will say down, and I don't really care what you call it. Just in my little world, I have to have things defined in a certain way, or I get very confused. So down means lay down. You know, your elbows are on the ground, your belly's on the ground, or as in Zuzu's case, we are sprawled everywhere at the moment. That's a good down. That's laying down. Off means you cannot jump up and put your paws on me. So when I see you starting to come up and I say off, that's your cue to go and put those front paws back on the ground. Now, you can train to a couple different things. In my house, it's always 4 on the floor. If all 4 paws are on the floor, then I will talk to you. Some people want to train that further and go to a sit, and that's absolutely fine with me. But apparently, I'm an inherently lazy individual, and 4 on the floor works very well for us. So off, I find to be nice too, because it can be used in other ways. Just as I start to see you coming up for any reason, off, 4 on the floor, and they tend to take then a step away from me as well.
Do you use off as well for getting off of furniture? Like for a dog who's allowed on furniture, is your cue for getting off of the couch off, or something else?
Golly, Colleen, you had to ask that question. I think I use off, but I usually say get off. If we're on the sofa and I need you off the sofa, I need you off the bed, it's get off now.
Okay. My dogs have not been furniture dogs, so I don't have a cue for that. I've taught with various clients different words for that. But I don't teach a don't jump off, because I am teaching 4 on the floor, but without a verbal cue, you know. So I use off typically for the furniture, you know, you're allowed up, and then we use off to get off. But it is a very valuable cue for that. In both cases.
Okay.
So some of your optional cues are definitely case by case, very, very valuable, particularly the leave it, drop it combo.
Yes.
Because if you're going to teach one, you probably should be teaching both of those. If you have the investigatory kind of dog who just has to go check things out with its mouth.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And I also find, too, that that's a particularly important one if there's a lot of small children in the house.
Really?
Because otherwise, yes, because otherwise we're losing Barbie hands and feet. And, there's nothing wrong with you know, a footless Barbie, per se, but, you know, all those little shoes, how are you going to wear all those little shoes? How are you going to wear those? So, and, you know, then it may progress to headless Barbie. And then, you know, unless it's Halloween and you're doing the, you know, Sleepy Hollow, it's really not as good. So I find with small children that the leave it or drop it is really handy because it's so tempting to pick up those hard plastic toys.
And Beanie Babies.
And chew on
them. Beanie Babies were the irresistible thing when my kids were little. My Labrador would just walk around with his mouth just like puffed out. You couldn't really see much of anything. He would just sort of walk around like, I have something. And you're like, yeah, I know you do.
That's right. Yes. And then the Beanie Babies, they lose an ear or a tail or an eyeball. Or I had a stuffed animal once when I was a kid, a little one, and I think the dog ate an eyeball off of it. My mother made an eye patch for it, which was very cute.
Pirate stuffed animal.
Yes, it was a little pirate mouse from that point on. I actually liked him better with the eye patch. But nonetheless, you don't really want your dog swallowing that kind of thing. So leave it and drop it, I think, are really handy in small families. Or big families with small children.
Well, and for any dog who has any tendency to take things and run off with them.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
I don't really mind if a dog picks things up as long as they bring things to you. You know, like when Edsel arrived, we used to say things were being delivered to me by Elkhound Express because the boys would leave things around and then they'd be like, Mom, did you see my whatever? He'd be like, it's on my desk because it had come running in by Elkhound Express. Like, look what I found. I found this book. I found this pencil. I found, you know, and if he would run toward me with things, I was delighted. If he was going to run and chew them somewhere else, that's not so great. So he became like, you know, the delighted explorer of the house going, I found this and I found that. And is that worth a trade? Do I get a Cheerio? Do I get something for that? Yes, you do.
That's right. Do. That's true. And I can always tell when Zuzu needs more exercise because I find shredded Kleenex everywhere. Yeah. It's like, oh, look, it's a Kleenex, Mom. I really think that we ought to be recycling this. So I'm going to shred it so it recycles better. So, yeah, it's nice to have the drop it. And then Target or Touch, a lot of people call it Touch. I find that to be really handy. And I used to teach that later in classes, like in my beginning classes, I teach it in lesson number 5. I now teach it in lesson number 1. And the reason for that is that before the name game gets really strong or your cum gets really strong, it's another way to get your dog to disengage from what it's looking at and to re-engage with you by putting their nose right on your hand. And I really like that. The other reason why I teach it fairly soon is that if I'm working with either overly exuberant dogs or I'm working with shy dogs, it's a really great way for dogs to be able to know how to interact with people in an appropriate way. Your shy dog, if a person puts their hand down by their side, a shy dog goes, oh, I know what that means. I can put my nose on their hand. And the person's hand is right in the great position to scratch them under the chin rather than thump them on the head. And for exuberant dogs, if your hand's by their side, it's really, really hard to jump on you and put my nose on your hand. So I find that to be really a much more important behavior than I used to think it was because it can be used in so many different situations.
Yeah, it can be a really helpful behavior. And it's a real easy way to set up a whole bunch of tricks, which people like training, and any kind of training is all learning. So if you're having fun training your dog to spin or do anything like that we've based off of a touch, it helps with your training for the boring stuff like down or stay or, you know, some of the things that we tend to be a little bit more serious about. Because all training should just be fun tricks in your head because we're going to get farther. Right. We can just go, this is fun. How are we doing today? Great.
And I also find it useful for loosely walking.
Yeah, it can be great.
You know, put it down by your side, target or touch, and it once again right by that kneecap. The dog touches in, connects with you, take a few steps, give them a treat. So it can be really useful in a wide variety of situations. And it's great for dogs who, like I said, are either shy or exuberant.
Yeah. The one caveat on the shy dog is we do want to make sure that we're reading their body language the whole time because it's one thing to go up and touch a stranger's hand. It's another thing to go up and touch a stranger's hand and then have them touch you back. And so, you know, we would work toward the dog being welcoming of that and not just tolerating that, you know, like, because we want the dog to know that they're going to be safe. And so if we're telling them to do something, that it will be a safe and happy experience for them.
Good point. One little very good point
side
indeed.
Caveat. So then the only two that we have left here are related to one another, at least in my world. They are down and settle.
Yes.
So
yes.
Tell us the distinction that you have between down and settle.
Well, down means that you hit the ground. That your chest and your elbows are on the ground. Settle means that when you hit the ground, usually your hips settle in and you're going to stay there for a little while.
That is the distinction I make. So if I ask a dog to lie down and it lies down with its hips out to the side or with its hips under him, either way, that counts as a down. But if I've asked a dog to
Correct.
Settle, the hips have to be out to the side. I want
Yes.
the dog's legs to be not... We call the regular down the Sphinx position. Like perfectly
Yes.
balanced like a Sphinx, but ready to pop up at a moment's notice. And the settle really mm-hmm. is just that. They're settled. They're kind of like hanging out. And if you glance at your dog when they're just hanging out, like if I look right now, we've got a settle right here under my desk. And that's a very good thing. So my dog is
Yes,
not
and I have a settle right over
noise.
Here, too.
Yeah, see, so isn't this lucky
that's right.
we don't have dogs being noisy during our podcast because they're both settled. Mine is not being asked to settle. He just is. Is yours on a cue or just hanging out?
She's just hanging
See?
Out, I have to say.
So that's good because they both know the behavior and they both know this is a good one and they've been reinforced for it and life is easy and they just kind of choose it in quiet times.
That's
And
right.
that's what all of these
that's
behaviors
right.
are, that the more we use them as part of real life, they just become a piece of how we interact with each other, part of the relationship.
Absolutely. And I think that then it also, too, I think it builds appropriate confidence in your mm-hmm. dog. Because it doesn't build a cocky dog. What it builds is a dog that says, hey, I know what to do. If nothing else, I'm going to sit, because that usually seems to be a good thing. She seems to like that when I sit. And, you know, things are kind of boring. I'm just going to settle down. Mm-hmm. So the more we practice these things, the more we reinforce these things, the more our dogs are going to incorporate them into their own repertoire so that we don't necessarily have to ask them to do it. They're going to be thinking dogs.
Right.
And realizing that I'm in an opportunity that I can make a decision about how to behave. And I've got different options.
Mm-hmm.
And so what option is going to be most likely to get me a reward and be most comfortable for me? Because I think dogs think in terms of comfort and safety. Is this a safe thing for me to do, and is this a comfortable thing for me
Absolutely.
To do?
Absolutely. Dogs are always thinking that. And so are people. We're always
Yes.
thinking that. So when we're so busy thinking dog behavior is different, it's not. So quick recap. My five were a good name game, sit, come, stay, and loose leash walking manners. And your four plus bonus were?
Sit, come, leash manners, off, or no jumping. And then the alternate ones would be leave it or drop it, target, go to bed, settle, down.
Yep.
Go to bed, settle, and down are pretty much similar.
Yeah, although go to bed, I didn't specifically address in this last one, which is actually a location-based thing. So you're not just telling a dog
right.
to settle here. You're saying, like, that spot over there that you totally know, I'd like you to leave where I am and go over there. And that is a great cue for many dogs to have.
Yeah. And the settle, go to bed, and down are all very closely related. And can, you know, once you get one, it's pretty easy to move to the
yes.
next couple of those. So, all right. I think that pretty much sums up those five cues that your dog needs to know. We haven't mentioned it in a while. We do take phone calls and... voicemails, and we love your comments and questions. So if you would like to leave us a comment or a question, you can call us at 614-349-1661 or leave a message on our website, yourfamilydogpodcast.com.
See you next week.
See you next week, Colleen.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.
If you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend about it. We'd love to reach people who feel as we do, that life is better with a dog.